Accession number 31425, says Mick Gagan, Real 17. Now, we're talking about your time in Korea, and one of the things you've been mentioning is these patrols you went out on. Now, you know, tell us all about, as much as you can, about a typical patrol, and there's a couple of incidents I know that happened on patrols.
Well, the first, what used to happen, it was more or less a fixed line, and everyone has sent out, the Chinese have sent out many patrols because they were trying to look at land which they could take. But at the same time, the British were sending out patrols. And what you'd do, you'd send people out first of all, and they'd go on what you call listening post. That'd be within a short distance of the Chinese lines or North Korean lines. And there'd be a couple of men there, and they may have a telephone or they may have a short distance radio. You wouldn't have nothing big there.
Did you ever do any of the listening post?
No, but we used to go to the listening post, and they'd have a small radio back to their troop in the front line, so that if there was any movement, they could send it back. That where your listening post was, it would be the people that have it, and they'd say they're within about 20 foot of our listening post just coming past, because they'd be well undercover in a bush, under a tree, anywhere where they could be concealed. And, you know, and there'd be that. And then we'd carry on to their places.
Now, what size and composition would your patrol be with, say, the Norfolks or the Welsh Regiment?
Well, it was sometimes it could be a dozen people, sometimes it could be a lot more. It's all according to what was going. If it was going out on a fighting patrol, then you'd have a lot more, because what used to happen, you'd go out and you may be going round a hill. So you'd send one lot round a hill and another lot round the other side, just to recce the area and things like that, so that if you did get in ambushed or met another patrol of the enemy, then you'd be well covered with your friends who could really cover you if it was. But what we've got to realise, that in Korea it was nearly all hills and everything like this, and rocks and everything. It wasn't just plain sailing when you went on patrols, also ditches and small rivers, irrigation ditches, which were there from before the war started. And some of those small rivers, they'd only be about 6 foot wide, but some of them were very deep because they were irrigation for all the land and everything like this. So you had all different things like this to contend with, and also mud and clay, you could slip anywhere, which was very hectic sometimes, especially if you're going round a hill and you've got to go up a bit, and you could guarantee that the Chinese or North Koreans had been in there as well, and sometimes they'd have their own listening posts or outside dugouts in the forward areas.
Now, what would you be carrying? What set would you have?
I'd most likely have a small handset and things like that.
Do you know which one it was?
No, it was a small one. It was about a foot high and about 6 inches square.
And what range? How effective was it?
It could go up to about a half mile or something like that. And you could get it more than that. It's all according where you were, if you wasn't enclosed. And they were good batteries, because you always took spare batteries out with you. And at the same time, you had a throat microphone with you, so that you could look what you were doing, and you've still got two hands free.
Now, what sort of messages would you be sending back or receiving, well, if any?
If we were going out, we wouldn't get no messages sent. They wouldn't send out. We'd only send back, and that would be in an emergency. We may be out 4 or 5 hours going on the patrol, going wrecking.
Always at night?
Always. Well, not always. In the Samichon Valley, a few times we went out in the daylight as well, because we were in there. There was some heavy trees and everything like this. What wasn't shot down, but you could dodge in and out the trees and go along, and you could get behind a hill where you wasn't in view of the Chinese OPs and things like that. And many times you'd do that, or else you'd go out of a night and stay out all day in a concealed position and come back the following night.
So you'd hide up?
Yeah, you'd have to hide up. And this is where you all your camouflage, you'd have a bush on your head or anything like that.
Is that all it was, or did you have creams and things like they do now?
No, you didn't. You didn't have. You had to have everything there, what you could do, and also all you had was a map, and a pad and a pencil, because no one had photo cameras or nothing in those days. So you made the most best of the situation what you was in.
Now, do you remember any incidents from any particular patrols you went on? I know you were wounded in April, so we'll come to that. Anything before that?
No, only a couple of times we went out, and there were skirmishes the enemy had seen.
What do you remember about them?
Well, you go out and it'd be the enemy could open up with a burp gun and everything like that, and as soon as they opened up with them, you threw yourself flat, because they're spread everywhere. They could empty a magazine in seconds. And if sometimes you'd engage the enemy, or the patrols would, which I was with, or else a lot of times, then you make your way back. You've actually found where the patrols were, and you could make your way back to your lines, and you make sure there's no one in the area, and then you could bring down gunfire and bring down air in the area and bring down airbursts mostly. And because they spread out, and if that patrol was still in the area or somewhere like that, then they'd suffer with a few rounds of airbursts. And then you'd end up with a couple of rounds of HE. But there was one time when the Norfolks got attacked on Crete. It was a place called Crete. It was a small hill. And the Chinese come and attacked them.
Well, tell us about that incident.
That was to our right, down in the forward, and I had a good view of Crete, but daylight, this was in the night time, and they had sent out, the regiment had sent out some people on Crete. It was only a very small little couple of trenches and everything, but the enemy must have been watching, and they put in a good attack right along it, and they did take that hill. But then we brought down harassing fire. This means that we spread out the gunfire, we spread it right out, also airbursts and everything like this, and in different areas, right back to the Chinese lines, which we knew that they'd be going back to. So we'd do it on like a grid. We'd put so much here, so much there. And the harassing fire we could put up, I've known it to go on for a couple of hours. And when the daylight came, you could see a good few people. You could see them sometimes, especially if they're in a bit of a clear space, you could see bodies and everything like that.
And but they kept Crete, or did they have to evacuate it?
They evacuated it, but then the Chinese evacuated it.
The Chinese
evacuated it, because it it was so near our lines, and they wouldn't stay on there because they'd get blown to pieces. And they used to make their own way back, and everywhere you went, the Chinese made good use of everything. They've even dug holes, trenches. We found a couple of trenches with Chinese bodies in, and those covered over, and they were covered in grass and twigs and everything, so you couldn't even see them. And they used to dig a hole and cover themselves in and stay there. Even when the patrols are going through, they'd stay there underground. and this happened once. They took a hill with that, with the same tactics, just buried herself and come out when everything was dark. So that is what happened, you know.
Any other incidents or big things before you got wounded the first time?
Well, they were nearly all the same. We went out, you know, but I was out with the Norfolks once in the Semichorn Valley, and we're going across, and they had a man out, the corporal in the medical corps, and he used to come through with a stretcher. He'd carry us, or if he could. It was a kind of a fold-up one, what he had. But he was a very keen man. And he's going through, we're going across this river, and he disappeared. He had gone down a full shell hole, and he come up, coughing and spluttering. We were supposed to not make a noise, but he's come up there, nearly drowned him. But he carried on. He was a decent bloke, he was. He was in the Army Medical Corps, you know, so we liked him.
Anything else?
Not really on the patrols, because they were nearly always of the same character if you went out.
Now tell us about the time you got lightly wounded. That's the first time.
Oh, yes. I was with the Welch Regiment, and we was going to an outpost called Outer Fox. That was at the bottom of 355 and near Kippingall, the hill opposite, and the Welch had sent out patrols and heard men digging, and we were going down because we thought that they were digging a trench or communication trenches between the two hills, and we were going down to try and see if we could and then find out exactly where they were, and we could hear the Chinese talking. All of a sudden, they've heard us and they've opened up on us, and with burp guns and everything. And Captain Thompson and myself, we had actually taken a 21 set and a battery that night, because we was going to try and set up a small OP if we could. In that, it would be undercover behind rocks or anything, and. We threw ourselves down, and the tree that we went behind got badly hit, and it caught me. Luckily, it went through. It was a fresh wound.
Where at?
In the ankle, and in the bottom of my leg, and.
And this was a shell fire, was it? Or
no, this was a bullet. This was a bullet from the Chinese. And they opened up with this burp gun. And I think it was from the burp gun, because they opened up with everything. And it really gave me one for a minute, but I carried on and got the field dressing out, and I did my leg up. And when I got back, when we got back in the early hours of the morning to our bunker, or to the lines, we didn't go to our own bunker, it was a bunker. And when I looked, I was very lucky, because it had caught me boot and it had caught me top of my ankle. And I was lucky there, and putting the bandage on. And I got it seen to by our battery doctor. When I went back, it was the battery doctor which did it up, and he gave me an injection and things like this. So, but I could still carry on.
So you did. So that was anything else. So then you go back to normal routine then.
You go back to your normal routine, but they may say we're going to go out so and such a night, you know, and they might not need us or anything like that, you know, if they were just going out on a recce to get information somewhere. But sometimes when we did go out, we'd go out with the intention that if they did get ambushed, we could bring down gunfire. And we, although it was black and everything like that, we knew from the area where we were and the map reference and where we were going. So, but other than that, we'd be back to where we were 4 or 5 days in the OP and back to the unit, carrying on doing our duties there.
Now, we haven't really looked at what you did when you weren't at the OP. So what was like? What was it like when you were back at the unit?
Well, we was back in the gun position, and the signallers would take turns in the command post, different places there on a little exchange which we had.
And what was the command post like? Can you describe what the equipment that was in?
Well, in the command post, it had tannoys, because you had four guns to a battery, and this was the battery command post. You'd have four guns, and you'd have your mic fixed up to each tannoy, to each gun. The officer would have the artillery board to do in imminy TECAC. They'd be bringing everything down onto the board, all the map references, recorded targets. Sometimes you had recorded targets, that's where you're fired perhaps a week beforehand, but you've recorded a target, and the enemy would come out on that area, so you knew exactly, because you had in your pad or something, you knew exactly where they were, because we used to do little sketches, and you'd say on recorded target so and so, whatever number it could be, you know, you might have recorded target number 11. And you'd have that down, and of course, they'd got all the information there already written down, so they wouldn't have to go through the artillery board and sort it all out. They'd just give out to the guns what they needed, elevations and everything like that.
They'd been pre-registered.
It had been pre-registered so that they could call this out, and they were excellent at this, the gun position officers, because you could, if you was going to attack a target or bring down fire on that target, they could do it within minutes, because they got everything there, call all the guns to take post, they'd rush out, and whatever, if it was going to be a shell, they'd say HE or smoke or airburst, and they'd give the range. Even with airburst, the gunners would be setting the caps for that distance and everything like that. And you'd have the signallers in there. You'd have a couple of sets in the command post. And you always kept the batteries well topped up, because you had a charger. But you had that in a bunker, which didn't give out much noise. So you could charge the batteries up in a bunker, so you wouldn't have all the noise of the little generator going and things like that. And then the signaller would be, he may be on for an hour or 2 hours. And this is where, when we used to go back, we could relieve the signallers in that command post. Instead of them doing 2 or 3 hours at a time, we could let them have an hour off and things like this. But we was always doing signals, and also with the OP signallers, I used to make sure that they'd be out testing all the small radios, what you carried on your belt or anything like that. The batteries all had to be kept in. You had a little battery tester, and if one battery was a bit low, then you'd go and get a new one. And mostly, you'd get onto the signal sergeant, and then he'd have to get them through. You had a battery signal sergeant, which used to bring all the supplies in for the sets, and you'd have. Sometimes you'd have a valve go in the 22 or the 21 sets, and then you've got to find out what one it is. This was all part of your signals, and you'd find everything like that. Also, the small generators, you'd keep everything clean, especially the aerials and the contacts, and you always made sure your equipment was there, because not only was you in the command post, we got called out once because one of the OPs had been hit, so we had to put everything in the Jeep and shoot off into that area and make our own command post within a distance where we could see the other OP.
You mean OP post, not command post?
OP post, yeah. So you was always ready for stuff like anything like that. and doesn't matter what it was, you had to, we always made sure that they was 100% working, even the Jeeps and everything like that.
Did you also have to sort of maintain a telephone line system as well as the wirelesses?
Not, we didn't maintain it in that sense, not to the front line, because we did have signals, but we had a cable to the front line, but that was so enclosed and everything. Even in the road, there was a little trench dug, so it could be under there. So you didn't have to keep going out looking at the lines. And there was only a couple of times when it had actually been hit with a shell, and you had to go out. But seeing where the shell was, seeing where the shell hole was, you had a pretty good idea it was. Then you'd go out with your Don 8 cable, strip the end of the thing, make a tie back, put a new cable in, insulate all the new piece of cable, and you double insulate it to make sure that no water got in or anything like that. But we were pretty well up with the signal lines and everything like that.
Would they go to the OP ever, or was it always wireless to the OP?
No, you'd have the phone to the OP as well. You'd have your phone, because if the wireless failed, then you've got your phone. This was,
so you'd normally use the wireless rather than the phone
for calling down gunfire. Yeah, and if the officer wanted to speak to anyone in the down there, they'd phone back to the battery. They'd go back to the battery exchange, and whoever was on the exchange would transfer you to the officers, to the officers' mess or anywhere, command post, different battery posts or anything like that.
Now, anything else about life of the gun permits? So that's what you did. You were on signal duty in the command post.
Yeah. Well, what I used to do, we used to have a little bit of free time and everything like that.
So what would you do with that?
And we had a little piece of flat ground, and we managed to get the Sergeant Major, myself, down by the Australian lines, we managed to get some camouflage netting, and it was about 10 foot high, and we got a good lot of that, come back with a truck full of them, and we made just by the command post on a flat piece of ground, and we levelled it out, and we made like a cricket patch. So we got some stumps and everything, and we used to have cricket practice on there. And way back from the guns, there was a flat piece of land, and we'd managed to get the Americans to clear it, and we went, that used to go down there and have a kickabout and with the footballs, because we used to do everything to keep the fellas occupied, if you know, save them sitting about, and also to give them a little bit of incentive. There wasn't much to do, you know, and different things like that. So I don't think any of them kept busy. And also, we were surrounded by hills, and I'd send my lads up in the hills to see if they'd find, like, it was only like a scheme, but to find a place, to see if we had to go out anywhere to find an OP, anything like that. You know, used to give them some incentive to go and find different things. And they'd go up with the radio sets, and then they'd call me up. We'd have different frequencies. We'd get a frequency which isn't being used, so you're not interfering with anybody. But also, on the low frequency sets, we used to pick up Chinese. And we had a Malayan with us, a Korean with us. And sometimes he used to come to the OP with us, and he'd translate in English what the Chinese were doing. And this is once when we found a patrol. That was when the he had heard them talking, and they had seen this British patrol of the Norfolks, and which was very handy. And we found out from the Norfolks they had a patrol out in that area, so we brought down gunfire, and the enemy were in a matter of yards from that patrol. So back in the lines, we used to send the fellas up in the hills just to find anything like that, and also up in the hills because the Chinese and North Koreans had been down before, and used to find a lot of old bodies and all that in the hills and trenches, everything. And we found Chinese with just their hands sticking out of the ground, what had been buried and everything like this. And this was in the hills, all at the side. But there was one incident. We had a terrific, it was raining like mad. When it rains there, everything gets flooded. And we was just going into this, we're changing gun sites. We'd just gone into a new position, and I was digging out in one place, and a couple of my lads was digging in another place. And we dug this hole, and we tried to cover it over with a poncho. But what we didn't know at the time, that it had been an old Korean burial ground, because in Korea, their ancestors, the higher the rank they were, the higher the hill they went. And we got up the hill pretty high so that we could do it. And these two fellas were there, and one of them, his name was Joins. And he laid there, he got in on this bunk, and it was raining, and all of a sudden we've heard a big shout and that, and gone to find out what had happened. What had happened, he'd dug the hole, and it must have been within inches of a body, what had been buried. And it had all, and the rain, as it coming through, because all you had up over you was an old poncho, and he was laying there, and the old body and bones and everything washed out over him. And this is the kind of things, you were fighting the elements, you know. So you wasn't fighting enemy all the time, you were fighting diseases, everything. And but I think that the lads, I'm not saying they enjoyed it, but they did a great job for what they were doing.
What was morale like, do you think?
Morale was very high. Morale was very, very high. And I think that one of the highest morales was when we hit these three ammunition dumps. And
that you mentioned last time.
Yeah, and the gunners, when they said that we'd hit this, and they give it out over the tannoys, there was big cheers went up and everything. So there was different, you know. But also, once a Chinese plane come over, very low, and we rushed out, bring guns, everything, and all the whistles blew, but he's just steer clear of our coming over us, and he shot round over to the American lines. But that was about the only plane what we saw. It was like an observation plane, I think. It wasn't a fighter or nothing like that. And I understand that when he went over the American lines, he never reached his back to his own lines.
They shot him down.
Yeah, they shot him down, you know. So
but that was a rarity, a Chinese
oh, animal. Yeah, very rare. You did. That was the only one I ever see, you know.